Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon, a very warm welcome to the Friday Report. It's just after 1 o'clock. My name's Lucy. Joining me in the studio today, Vic Slouthian from the Isle of Wight Green Party and Green Party leader Natalie Bennett. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for joining us today. We've got all manner of things to talk about today. You described it as a general chat, didn't you? That will be fair. Given the amount of things on my list, I feel like we're not going to get anywhere close. As always, if you want to get your comments and questions in, then we are open for business today. You can find us on the phone lines, 822-002. But as I say, do bear with us. Give us a chance to get there. You can leave a message on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We are at iWhite Radio, hashtag Friday Report. And you can find us on the text as well, IW, a space in your message, and send it in to 81222. First off, thank you very much for coming. You've already had a very busy morning this morning, Natalie. What have you been doing?
Well, the main event of the morning was we were launching the new Isle of Wight Green Party Green Island Green Future project, which is the next year basically consulting on how the Isle of Wight can take advantage of its obvious huge natural advantages, its advantages in terms of skills and knowledge of its people, and build a green economy, an economy that's built around small businesses, cooperatives, really strengthen the economy, create good jobs, and look after the natural environment. And of course, energy has been a large part of the mix, and you know, we're racing to try and get as much community energy in as possible before all the government deadlines kick in. So a huge amount to talk about in terms of solving some of the island's problems with green solutions.
You're facing a tough crowd here. There's been a lot of fear over things like wind turbines. There's fear over fracking. The island itself seems to be going through a bit of a downer of late, with lots of tourist attractions closing. And I think that's giving people the impression that the island isn't really on the up at the moment. There are lots of businesses out there doing their best, but sort of the overall impression as someone looking in seems that the island's struggling a little bit. How do you sort of even start talking about a green plan for the island?
Well, I think we've got to look at the enormous possibilities. There's a huge amount of energy around, and here I'm talking about physical energy, the possibilities of tidal. The last time I was here, I was visiting a developing tidal project, the possibilities of solar, obviously, and even though, of course, we've heard a lot of bad news about the cuts to the feed-in tariff, and we've still got to wait to hear what the government's final response to the consultation on that is, there's still lots of possibilities for solar. Solar is not dead. Solar is the coming thing. If you're looking at factories, looking at warehouses that use the energy, solar still makes perfect sense. And then there's a possibility, very, very sad about the decision about Navitas Bay, and very determined to say that fracking is no kind of solution for Britain's energy future. I was actually just last week up in Upton near Cheshire, where there's a community protection camp. They've been there for 18 months, determined to stop fracking, with very strong support from the local community, which is a community not in many ways unlike many on the Isle of Wight. Around Chester, it's a very traditional Tory voting area. But against the trend of the general election, they elected a Labour MP who was an anti-fracking MP. Up there, because there's been the real and immediate threat of fracking, people have got together and said, we're not going to accept fracking. And I think we're going to see that up and down the country. The Isle of Wight, I'm sure, does not want fracking. Nobody wants fracking. The government is heading entirely the wrong direction with its energy policy, with the focus on gas that we've seen this week from Amber Rudd. So what we need to do is focus on the positives, the alternatives that are there available, and that the rest of the world is powering ahead with, countries like China, the US and Germany, and make sure that Britain isn't left behind.
Do you feel, though, that you are fighting a bit of a losing battle there? Because you don't have, you've got 168 councillors, but you don't have the representation countrywide in perhaps the way that other parties do. On top of that, you've got the government who have, a very clear policy on energy, and it doesn't really involve things like wind turbines.
Well, the fact is, what we're coming off is a general election where we got 1.1 million votes around the country. That was four times more than the votes we've ever got before. Membership of the Green Party more than trebled in the year of the election. And so we're coming from a real position of strength and growth. And what we have to offer are the positive solutions. A lot of people are understandably fearful about the future at the moment, fearful about the state of our economy, fearful that they or their children won't be able to secure a job they can build a life on. We're offering a different kind of economic structure, a real alternative. And, here on the Isle of Wight, of course, it was our third highest vote around the whole country in terms of numbers of votes. it's a real area of strength. I think that's reflected in the fact that I've visited three times in the last year or so. I'm expecting to be back. This is an area of real growth and possibility for the Green Party, and something I and the local Green Party is very much focusing on.
And of course, Vix, you're the lady that garnered those votes in the election. I mean, what's been your message to island businesses today? What are they doing enough to be green? Are they doing enough to help the future of the Isle of Wight, be that economically or in a green way?
Well, today was about actually supporting those businesses rather than being a critical friend and saying they're not doing enough green. It's actually not just for the established businesses, but opening that up for small and medium-sized businesses to join us in our initiatives, such as a Green Dragon initiative, where people could put forward their plans and we can help them secure funding for those plans. It was trying to create a more sustainable economy. From what you were saying, Lucy, about the problems with our tourism recently, with losing those three animal-based businesses that we've had, I think we need to be obviously supporting our tourism economy, but we also need to be looking at making more sustainable jobs, so year-round jobs, not seasonal jobs, so that, as Natty said, there are jobs to build a life on and not just seasonal summer employment.
I want to mention those animal businesses, actually. We've had the three that have closed of late. Seaview Wildlife Encounter, Fort Victoria, Coleman's Animal Farm all closed their doors. Now, I was looking through Green Party policy last night, and there's a clause in there talking about abolishing zoos and private collections, except where they're for the benefit of animals concerned. There has been a lot of talk about animal attractions on the Isle of Wight. How would that play out with these sorts of businesses? Are you talking about closing down things like these small farms and these small attractions?
Well, I think what we want to do is focus on the natural possibilities that are already there, you know, the possibilities of bird watching, animals in their natural environment, in which you're able to see free animals acting naturally and you know, experience a beautiful natural environment at the same time. There's a huge possibility for that. That's the natural thing to focus on. And that, of course, is something that the Isle of Wight has uniquely as an attraction, and I think that's certainly where the focus should lie.
So you I mean, in terms of the future of things like you know, the alpaca farm in the West,
a lot of our animal businesses are actually sanctuaries. The Owl and Monkey Haven is a sanctuary, the Donkey Sanctuary, the Isle of Wight Zoo is a tiger sanctuary. So we actually really focus a lot of our animal tourist businesses are on exactly the sort of thing which completely fulfills the Green Party policy on that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the sort of thing is you know, sadly we do have lots of animals that need to be rescued, that need to be supported, that are victims often, you know, on our roads, and that's something we entirely support and encourage.
Let's talk, if we may. I've got some questions in first off to kick us off, and this one's from Nicholas Belfitt, who's the vice chair of the Isle of Wight Liberal Democrats. Was your party's lack of green policies a reason for your lack of success at this election, he asks?
I think we do notice that this is a question coming from a Lib Dem, and I'd very much invite anyone listening to look at our manifesto for the 2015 general election. And what we were focusing on were the policies, that the green policies that would make a real difference to people's lives. And that means one of the focuses was on warm, comfortable, affordable to heat homes for everybody. And you look, if we had a program, if we treat our homes, British homes, as part of our national infrastructure, and we insulate them, provide energy efficiency measures in every home that needs it, that would lift 9 out of 10 households out of fuel poverty, create 100,000 jobs, and significantly cut our carbon emissions. If you look at the fact that we were very much focusing on public transport, local transport, saying our transport policy shouldn't start with HS2, but should instead start with local walking and cycling, support for local buses, you know, support for the essential services that get people round in their community. Again, that's good for communities, it's good for employment, and it cuts congestion on our roads, cuts our carbon emissions, and tackles the problem of air pollution.
I mean, here, just to pick you up on the transport, here, obviously, it's all about the ferries and the buses. I mean, where do you stand on the ferries?
Well, I think that there's a real issue, and people say, you know, my three visits to the island, I've heard very regularly, the problem of the cost of the ferries is very clearly an issue. And I think that's something that's got to be looked at, particularly the cost for people who might need to use them on a regular basis. But I think also it's a question of you creating jobs on the island so people don't find themselves having to commute off the island at that significant expense. Mm. You know, build up a strong local economy, small businesses, cooperatives. You know, the ideal is that actually we commute more than most other countries in Western Europe. People commuting is not great environmentally, but it's also not great socially. It's much better if parents are home to tuck the kids up in bed and read them a nighttime story than if they're still slogging home on the trains and the ferries and whatever to get home. So building those strong local economies is an environmental imperative, but it's also a social imperative and an economic imperative.
I mean, economically on the island, wages are inherently lower. There's a real culture of people having to leave the island to go to work and then come back. How do you raise the income level on the island to match those mainland, the mainland levels of salary?
Well, I think the key is innovative small businesses utilising technology. We were actually hearing this morning that today is the exact 100th anniversary of a test flight of a flying boat that was on the river being tested here 100 years ago. This was, the whole Solent was an absolute centre of technological innovation and change. There's still a lot of that knowledge here. One of the things we were talking about this morning was intergenerational exchange. Many of the people who were working on those jobs historically have retired now, but that doesn't mean we still can't utilise their knowledge, their excitement, their enthusiasm for those kind of jobs to help young people attract and learn the same excitement, develop those skills and develop businesses on the island. Tidal power is the obvious example where there's already some really exciting things happening, and jobs in those kind of areas pay very well. If we have, rather than based on big multinational companies, retail stores that often pay the minimum wage, 0 hours contracts, again, small local businesses, if you're running your own successful small retail business, you can be taking a decent wage out of that if we've got a strong economy. So it's a matter of building all that up, options of jobs for lawyers, jobs for accountants. Once you've got that small business economy, there's all those possibilities there. Sign writers, carpenters, all those kind of jobs.
And the other unique transport problem for the Isle of Wight is an issue that has been sort of rumbling on in terms of the future of our Island Line service. This is the train service that runs between Ryde and Shanklin. And there are questions to be asked about the future of that. We're being told that while it'll be included in the next contract under the South Western Trains franchise contract, its future beyond that is about independence, which is been the phrase that's been used, working towards independence. Where do you stand on that that particular issue?
There is no other train line nationally that's been asked to do this. For some reason, the Isle of Wight, supported by our MP, the Isle of Wight has been used as a testbed, I think, for that idea of a community-run railway, which sounds, all very positive, but actually this is a commuter railway. There are people in Shanklin who use that railway to get to work, elsewhere, Portsmouth, even go to London. This is a commuter railway. It's tied into our economy in terms of business, and it's tied into our economy in terms of tourism because it is linked to the national network. You can buy a train ticket to Shanklin or anywhere on that line from elsewhere in the country, and I strongly believe that we shouldn't put that in jeopardy in terms of having it as a standalone service. I still query about whether there's anywhere else nationally that's doing this, and there isn't. And I do worry about being used as a testbed for a Conservative Party policy to sell off our railway.
But it's very tough to get that message to Westminster. You know, we're not just physically cut off here. You do feel, emotionally, mentally quite cut off when you're trying to get that message to the decision makers and say, look, this isn't some tin pot station that a few people use to go and see a nice attraction. This is actually somebody's job.
But that shouldn't be the case, should it? Because our Member of Parliament should actually be supporting Islanders in that and should actually be standing, at the public meeting at Shanklin, 3 or 4 months ago. And there's overwhelming condemnation of this proposal by nearly everybody in the room was against this proposal. The only people who seem to be for this proposal is people based at our Member of Parliament's office. And I think that you're exactly right. There is a gap there in terms of Westminster because our MP is not speaking the same that the members of the island are.
But what can the Green Party do differently? I mean, how can you ensure that that message is taken to London?
Well, I think the Green Party basic philosophy is that decisions should be made as locally as possible by the people affected. I used to call this localism, but I'm afraid Eric Pickles has so entirely destroyed that word that I can't really use it anymore. But it's really important principle of democracy that decisions should be made locally, and particularly here on the Isle of Wight with the particular island circumstances. It's really important that you have a really strong local representation and local decision-making power.
But isn't that what a community train service would be? It's the very ultimate localism. It's the very ultimate locally decided prospect.
But I think you can make a local decision that says this is part of the national infrastructure, and that's where real local power lies. And I think there's a parallel with this with what's happening in Manchester. Many people might know that the government is bigging up the devolution to Manchester of certain powers, the whole northern powerhouse idea. But what's actually happening there is it's not genuine local power at all. The government is passing down responsibility for dealing particularly with NHS and social care without the money or the power to really deal with it. It's also been handed down from on high, the whole pattern of devolution. Local people haven't been consulted. In South Yorkshire, where there's another devolution, the Green Party in the council put a motion to say, let's have a referendum, let the people decide this. And sadly, both the Lib Dems and Labour voted against allowing people to have a decision. So people have to be able to decide, is this something that entirely belongs to us, or is this part of something much broader, and how do we feed into that process? And that those are whole structures, just like the broader problem of our whole electoral system, our whole constitution, really are falling apart.
Let's go to this second question again from the Vice Chair of the Isle of Wight Liberal Democrats. With your party failing to be the greenest party, Paddy Ashdown claiming the Liberals are the party of the moderate environment supporters, why should voters support you?
Oh, I do think the Liberal Democrats are getting a very good run here, and I think people might want to reflect on the Liberal Democrats' performance under the last government. But I'm very proud proudly point to our whole model of how we build a genuinely sustainable society. We understand, and we're the only party that really grasps, that we cannot have infinite growth on a finite planet, but that we can actually build a better society within those environmental limits. We're the party of real change. We saw the Liberal Democrats in government as very much being part of the status quo, and really not grasping the kind of policies that we need. We saw the Liberal Democrats in government. They talked about championing tidal power, but the Swansea Bay project didn't get the go-ahead. Sadly, now under this government, they won't be building next spring. Who knows when they might be building. Really, the Liberal Democrats have utterly failed, and I really would invite people to look at their record.
I've got a couple of points in on Twitter here. This is IOW Richard. He's taking issue here with a comment that you made in terms of innovative businesses being key to raising wages on the Isle of Wight. He's sort of implying that won't work. He has yet to be convinced.
Well, I think if you look around the world, that what really achieves real returns that gives you support is not doing more of the same. Mm-hmm. Importing lots of cheap goods from China and selling them at a minimum price. We know that's a retail model of zero hours contract, low wages, a race to the bottom. If you're not going to be caught in that race to the bottom, what you need to do is be doing something new and different, mm-hmm. but also very much be catering to your local community. If we have a strong local business community and each one catering to the other, then what happens is money goes round and round in the local economy. Whereas if you have an economy that's based on big multinational companies, most of the money that's spent or given to those companies swooshes off away on the wind from the Isle of Wight, very often, sadly, into the nearest tax haven. So if you have local businesses paying their taxes, supporting each other, being businesses for each other, you have a strong, what's known in the jargon as a business-to-business trade, then that's the foundation of something really different.
Richard's second point here, he says they subsidise the buses. Why not trains and ferries to make it competitive and sustainable?
Well, I think we do also, in terms of the train system, we're subsidising the profits of private companies, of course, through the whole privatised train operating companies. The Green Party is very much opposed to that. We want to bring railways back into public hands, run them for the benefit of passengers, not shareholders. And on the ferries point, since that's a local one, I'll hand that one over to Vix.
Well, absolutely. I think there's a variety of different options for our ferries. You could call it nationalisation, you can call it public ownership, you can call it subsidy. All of those involve the public having some form of say in the running of that service. And if that comes from a subsidy, where that is on That's in case they perform better in terms of frequency, they perform better in terms of pricing, and we actually have some sort of say in that and input in that to extend maybe the running hours of the service, and that's from a subsidy, then that's one possible solution. There are a number of them, and we need to actually be considering a wider scope of solutions and not just trying to fiddle around the edges with the one we've got.
Okay, I think let's take a quick break. Don't forget, if you want to get your questions into the studio today, lots of ways to do that. You can find us on Twitter. We are at iWhiteRadio, hashtag Friday Report. Alternatively, text us IW, a space, and your message. Send it into 81222. You can find us on the phones as well if you want to give us a call. 822002. Just bear with us and we will get to you. And if you head to Facebook as well, you'll find a post there. Just pop your question at the bottom. And we will put your questions to Vic Slouthian and Natalie Bennett, leader of the Green Party.
The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio. Mid-mornings on Isle of Wight Radio.
Sponsored by The Italian Touch. Your exclusive Isle of Wight stockist of Joseph Ribkoff.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Friday Report. It's just after 1:30 and joining me on the show today, leader of the Green Party, Natalie Bennett, and Vic Slouthian from the Isle of Wight Green Party. So we've been talking about the launch of Green Island and how that might impact the Isle of Wight, and a couple of our local issues too, a couple of which I want to come on to before we go to a few more questions today. Let's talk about the Green Party and getting onto local councils. We've talked a lot about localism here, but surely the essence to that is having local councillors making decisions at a local level. And however much support you had during the election, Vix, and however much support you had nationally, Natalie, you still haven't really cornered that market yet.
Well, I think in terms of the Isle of Wight, of course, we've got the big elections coming up in 2017. But I'm very pleased that actually to learn that we've got our first two councillors on Cowes Town Council. And that's something that I see up and down the country as a real foundation. That's genuine local decision making. And if you look at some places around the country, I'm thinking about Stroud, I'm thinking about Leinster, over near the Welsh border. Those are places where a lot of Greens on the town council have really created some really difference. In Stroud, they've managed to find some funds to support a lot of small startup businesses. In Leinster, the county council, the Tory county council, has basically just dumped huge amounts of services, and the town council's been able to pick them up and find innovative ways, support social enterprises, support local people to maintain those services, whether it's things from the tourist information centre to the grass cutting to keeping the loos open, some real basics. You know, town councils is a really important place to start. But I think, you know, with the big elections coming up in about 18 months' time here, it's a huge potential for the Green Party. We're offering something different. We're offering solutions that really tackle the economic, the social and the environmental problems that we're seeing right across the country. But I think on the Isle of Wight, we're seeing them in the island context particularly concentrated. So this is a really great place to build new solutions, different solutions that tackle the fact that there's so many people dependent on food banks, that our economy is so fragile and so dependent on really unreliable seasonal sources, and, you know, also tackle the environmental issues.
I was going to say,
nationally, obviously, you've heard of the green surge that the Green Party has undergone in terms of membership in the last year. And the Isle of Wight is just a perfect example of that. You know, the last elections in 2013, we put up one candidate on the whole island because the Isle of Wight Green Party was small. But next time in 2017, I mean, we're building up to that now. We're already starting training, discussions, looking at the maps, looking at target areas. All of that is happening because we actually have a number of members to be able to put candidates in all those wards, which we haven't ever been able to do before.
Do you see yourselves, though, as the party of government? Natalie, you stood in Holborn and St Pancras, but you didn't win that seat. It seems like people's hearts may be there, but when it actually comes to putting that cross in, they don't make that decision.
Well, I think the thing is that 2015 for us was a big transition. It was a building stone. And in Holborn and St Pancras, you know, my vote was five times what it had been before. That was a big leap. But I think, you know, we do have to focus on, in terms of the Isle of Wight elections, I'm confident we can do very well under the current system. But it's very clear that our current system is failing. We need electoral reform. The current government has the support of only 24% of eligible voters. That's not any kind of mandate for the vicious attacks that it's making in terms of on tax credits, the vicious attacks on our whole social fabric, social care, etc. We need electoral reform. It's something that's very much getting more and more attention, more and more focus. And the Green Party, with our 1.1 million votes in the general election, if we had a proportional election system, the kind of election that's coming up now in Wales, in Scotland and in London, and most of the rest of Europe already has, Caroline Lucas, the Green MP, would have 24 Green MP compatriots in the House of Commons. That would be a world in which people could feel like their vote counted, that voting was a simple process. You vote for what you believe in and you get it. And that's something that we very much need to fight for, you know, ideally before the next general election.
Let's go to another question, if I may. This is from Ian McKee, who stood against Vix as the UKIP parliamentary candidate in the last election. The Greens had a target of 500,000 new social homes to be built by 2020 in their manifesto. And I had a look last night, and that is still in your policies there. It would form part of the local Green Party campaign here for 2017. So could you tell us roughly how many of this 500,000 would likely be built on the Isle of Wight and where you would build them?
Well, I think in terms of addressing the where, obviously what we want to do is look at brownfield sites. There are, I think, a significant number of sites on the Isle of Wight, brownfield sites, that we want to build, not luxury flats, not second homes, but actual real homes that people can afford to build, to live in, have their life in. And of course, what this current government is doing is taking away, with its new planned housing bill, is taking away the possibility of new developments having any social housing in them at all. So what we would be looking is very much at the brownfield sites. And I think in terms of the number of them on the Isle of Wight, what we'd have to look at is what the real demand is. And there clearly is a real demand. There's a real problem of cost. So it's a question of looking at where we can put these homes close to where people have jobs. This is the whole integrated process in terms of there's no point in putting people into places where there's no jobs, there's no public transport. And what we're seeing with the kind of development process we have now is homes built on greenfield sites on the edges of settlements where there's no public transport. People need two incomes to support a very expensive mortgage. The kind of building we're seeing now is not the kind of building we need. We need the brownfield sites. We need the genuinely affordable council social housing that is a foundation of our communities.
These are ideological suggestions, though. This is a huge thing to bring in, and you're talking about changing society from the very sort of, you know, ground roots. How do you even begin to do that?
Well, I think what we need to recognise, and I think this is clearer and clearer to people by the day, is that the status quo, the way things are now, is simply unsustainable. We're seeing young people who, you know, get the 2-1 degree, get a good degree, maybe do a master's degree. They've acquired already £44,000 worth of student debt that 73% of them will never pay off. 50p in the pound of that will never be paid off. And yet those young people then find themselves doing a 12-hour-a-week contract in a coffee shop because that's the only job they can get, or maybe on the Isle of Wight doing a seasonal work for a few months and then left unemployed. What we're doing now is not sustainable. It can't continue. And that's not just true environmentally. It's very much true about the structure of our economy. Big multinational companies are not paying their way, not paying their taxes. They're parasites on the rest of us. And that cannot continue because we need to continue to improve the funding for our NHS. We're seeing the privatisation of the NHS that's both immensely costly and immensely damaging. We need to actually have a publicly run and publicly owned NHS, properly funded. We need properly funded social care, people paid properly. We have to significantly massively change what we're doing because it's not working the way we're doing things now.
The political history of the UK has these smaller parties that have risen up and gained popularity. You had the Labour Party for the 20th century. You have the Scottish Nationalists in Scotland doing this now. You know, they have to start from somewhere. It's not an overnight success. So the Green Party has to start from somewhere. Obviously, it started, you know, decades ago, but this surge has to just keep going from here. This is just the beginning of the next sort of, you know, 20, 30 years of us actually being able to be in those positions of power.
And just mentioning the SNP, I mean, it's worth focusing on even a year before the last general election. People would have told you that all seats in Glasgow are all entirely safe Labour seats. You count the votes in numbers of wheelbarrows. And yet the SNP took all but one seat in Scotland and all the seats in Glasgow. People really are looking around for alternatives. They're fed up with the politics they've got now. So this is a period of massive political change. And just because for the last century we've had the Labour and the Tory party as dominant doesn't mean that's going to continue into the future.
How much of that push for change is supporting the youth vote? Do you genuinely think young people should be, you know, taking part in the electoral process much younger? Or is it about thinking, well, maybe they're the more green-minded members of society and we catch them earlier, they stay with us?
Well, I think what's really critically important is that yes, young people register to vote, and we're seeing a real problem with that with the government's changes. And I'd urge everyone to check that they're registered to vote, you know, ASAP, because it's a really important issue. But more broadly than that, I'd urge everyone not just to get to vote, to get involved in electoral politics, but to get involved in politics in the broader sense. I talk to a lot of 14 and 15-year-olds who, even though it now looks like we might have votes for 16 and 17 in the EU referendum, still might not be quite old enough. And I say to them, do politics. Think about your local community, your school. What would you like to change? How could you improve things? And we've seen, for example, because of social media, all of the access that people have now. It was a member of the Youth Parliament from Cornwall who started an electoral reform petition just after the last election. He got 250,000 signatures. He joined the Electoral Reform Society and Unlock Democracy in presenting that petition outside Number 10. So you're a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 12-year-old can start a campaign, start a move in their local community, in their school to really change things. And that can become huge. And I'm urging all sorts of, you know, young people, whatever the party politics or none is, to get involved, because we need that energy, that enthusiasm, that youthful knowledge, because it's your world we're building. And we're seeing that more and more.
I want to talk to you, if I may, about a couple of national stories. Obviously, today there is another terror raid underway currently in Mali. The latest on that is that there are currently 100 hostages in that Radisson Blue Hotel in Bamako in Mali, and the special forces are in and they're trying to get people out. But we've obviously seen bomb threats across Germany. We've seen them in plane flights, and it obviously follows on from those horrendous Paris attacks. If you were the party of government, what would you be doing right now to try and end that situation?
Well, I think, first of all, it's worth saying for the people in Mali, people affected in Mali, people who fear their friends, relatives might be affected there, you know, sympathy, best wishes, good luck is the place where we have to start. But I think, you know, what we need to build to do is build inclusive societies, tolerant societies. We need to make sure that we build societies that support all of their members. And we need to support communities to resist the forces of radicalisation. That means, you know, we're very concerned about the government's prevent strategy, which demonises communities, can demonise, you know, individuals who are simply asking questions. What we need to do is work with communities, make sure communities who are concerned feel supported, that they have the information, the knowledge that they need. That's where the whole struggle against violence, against these vicious, hideous murders needs to begin.
And the other one I want to ask you, Natalie, this has come up today. British public finances recorded the worst deficit last month for any October since 2009. Government borrowing rose to £8.2 billion from £7.1 billion a year earlier. This comes, obviously, despite cuts to all sorts of manner of welfare. Again, if you were the party of government, what would be your next step?
Well, I think before we get to the hypothetical, let's start with where we are now, which is let's really ask questions about George Osborne's management of the economy. He has been in charge of that economy now for 5, going on 6 years. He really has to stop blaming previous people for the state we're in now. He has to take responsibility himself. But beyond that, what we need to do is invest austerity has clearly failed. We need to invest both in public services and also in building the kind of infrastructure that enables us to build a far more diverse economy. We've still got a fraud-ridden, corrupt, out-of-control financial sector. We need to rein that in and make sure that money's going into investing into making things, growing and producing food, building a different kind of economic structure. The whole focus, total focus on finance and services. You know, George Osborne, when he was first elected in 2010, was talking about restoring manufacturing, rebalancing the economy. You might notice that he's stopped talking about that because he's clearly patently failed to do that. I would say let's make sure that we can restore manufacturing, make things here again, make sure we grow and produce more of our own food, build those strong local economies, not rely on multinational finance and its risk-taking, fraud-ridden, corrupt nature.
Let's take a call, if we may. You might need to don your headphones at this point, and I'll bring up this phone line here. Oh, have you got your radio on there? Are you able to turn your radio off for me? Hello, who's there? Who's on Friday Reports?
Yeah, it's Chris.
Hello, Chris. What's your question for Natalie and Vix today?
She was all about building houses over here, right? And I'm just wondering, wouldn't it be best to get the transport sorted out first?
Sorry, we want to get what sorted out?
Let's get the transport sorted out. Because she said she's got to build houses near where all the transport is. But if you go over Freshwater and all that lot, right, and they want a transport, wouldn't it be easier to get all the transport sorted out? Because they're cutting buses back and everything, so... what she say about building houses?
All right, Chris, thank you. Let me put you put that question through to Natalie. Thanks for your call today. So before you do the houses, you've got to do the transport. How do you answer that one?
Well, I think, Chris, thanks for ringing in. And I would say that perhaps if you heard the whole session where I was talking very much about the need to invest in local transport, walking and cycling, local buses, and I know we're seeing cutbacks in community buses here on the Isle of Wight. So what we actually need to do is build those houses near where people's jobs are. So for regular, you know, day-to-day getting around, the ideal really is that people can walk or cycle to work. Then you take pressure off the roads, you deal with the problem of air pollution, you create a community that works. And people, you know, if you're having to commute an hour, 2 hours a day each way, that's a huge amount of extra effectively working time. If you're able to work, your house is near where your job is, then you actually have a far better quality of life. You've got more time. If you've got children, you've got more time for your children. You've got more time for community work, participating in the community. So the ideal is that those houses should be near to where people are working.
Although you'd have to keep your personal number or you'd be there at weekends, evenings. Diamond Hell on Twitter. Could you ask Natalie Bennett what her view is on a fixed link across the Solent to help businesses and residents on the Isle of Wight?
Well, I think we've just been talking about transport issues here, and actually having arrived on the ferry this morning and seen the traffic jams, I think what we really need to do is have a look at, you know, do a proper study and look at the whole issue of this. It's very easy to say this is a quick fix injection solution of, oh, we'll solve all our problems by building a bridge. But if that, you know, are we talking about a toll bridge? What sort of bridge are we talking about? How are we going to fund it? I think what needs to happen is there needs to be a proper full study looking at all the implications of this. And that's where you have to start. And, you know, we've seen the kind of mess that we've got into with the High Speed 2, HS2 rail link, which was basically drawn up on the back of an envelope by the former Labor government, desperate to win seats in the North in 2010. And now we're potentially stuck with this enormous white elephant. Let's have a proper transport policy. Let's think about a communications and transport policy. Internet links, how fast are they? Are they meeting businesses and individuals' needs now? If you've got a really good internet link, do you need to travel at all? We need to think about all of this together in terms of both our economy and our quality of life.
Vix, you were nodding throughout that. What your thoughts on the fixed link issue?
Absolutely. I support studies, not just looking at feasibility studies, but actual impact studies on the fixed link. I'm very concerned about many effects it could have on our island economy, our house prices, our health, education, all those things. And we need to look at all that before we start going any further down that fixed link route. We need to put it into a whole sort of transport infrastructure. You know, is a rail link better than a car link? You know, environmentally, economically, socially, all those different categories. Unfortunately, I don't think we've got progressed much in this debate in the last year in the absence of these studies. So I do urge the FixLink people to actually start commissioning these studies, and then we can engage in a proper informed debate.
Three more issues that I want to try and squeeze in before our news bulletin at two. I fear we may be late for it. First off, plans for a second MP for the Isle of Wight. Currently, we have one. There are in a pipeline possible plans to divide the island into two. There's no, I'm right in thinking it's going to happen soon, but we don't know how soon. And what are your thoughts in terms of getting that second MP?
Well, I think some of it does depend exactly what Natalie's talking about, people registering to vote, that the actual boundaries, if they're going to be redrawn, are going to be based on not the residents, but the actual people who are registered to vote. And so I do urge everybody, I think the deadline is very soon, if not today, for looking at that, to go online and register to vote in terms of that. Two MPs of the island. I remember this One White campaign a number of years ago when there's this idea we might be splitting the island and part of the MP would have to be taken over parts of Portsmouth. And I didn't support that campaign because that was leading towards less representation. On the island with the largest constituency, that means every individual vote counts less than anywhere else in the UK. And to have two MPs for the Isle of Wight would be double the representation, and that's all to the good for democracy.
Natalie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I very much stress what Vic said about urging the importance of registering to vote, and do it today. Just simply go online and Google register to vote. It's very simple. Ideally, you have your national insurance number to hand, but that's the only bit of paperwork that you need. And that's going to be really important, both in terms of calculating representation on the Isle of Wight, but also very important in terms of looking at issues around government funding. So this will have an impact. And just as a personal note for everyone, it improves your credit rating if you're on the electoral register. So that's a personal reason as well to make sure that you registered to vote.
I'm not sure I knew that. But what's your personal opinion on the idea of the Isle of Wight having a second MP? Does the island need one?
Well, I think what I would focus on is the need for electoral reform, in which you had a proportional election system in which you might have a number of representatives covering the whole region, in which case you might have a Green MP, perhaps a Tory MP, maybe even, if the people choose it, a UKIP MP, and you would have a number of representatives, and you'd be able to go to the one who perhaps most fits your needs, or the one who has areas of interest that most fits your area of concern. So I think electoral reform is a way that we can move in that direction.
Tell me, if you will, with a half an eye on the time here, about Europe. The big discussion is coming up. We are moving forward towards having to make a decision. Where do you stand on that?
Well, the Green Party is backing a vote to remain in Europe. We believe that we flourish best together when we work together on our joint problems. The fact is that Europe provides a foundation of standards, of workers' rights, environmental standards, food health standards, and there are decisions that need to be made at that sort of level. Plus, we celebrate the free movement of people in the EU. That's something that actually enriches all of our lives, enriches the possibility of our lives, and that's something that we want to maintain and support. So we think that the arguments are there for working together. But of course, we do very much want a reformed Europe. We're entirely opposed to the proposed EU-US free trade deal known as TTIP. Europe is far too centralised. We want to make sure that only decisions that need to be made are made in Brussels. And we also need to make sure that the whole democratic structure of Europe is vastly improved. But it's a bit like the Westminster Parliament. We clearly desperately need to reform and change it. But that doesn't mean we should abandon the idea of democracy altogether.
I want to ask you both very finally, the idea of a destination business improvement district. There is a big push at the moment to get businesses to get involved, to consult in becoming a bid district, which is the idea that businesses affected by tourism will pay in slightly to a pot, and then that money will be reinvested back into tourism. Just very finally today, as it's been such a big issue the last couple of weeks, your thoughts on that?
Well, that's obviously come about through the withdrawal of funds for Visit Isle of Wight and for our tourism board, as it were, and the businesses have been left having to pick that up. I mean, it does work on the continent. They do have taxes, business taxes, tourist taxes that you pay that goes back into the economy. I very much welcome the detailed information that the DBID people have put forward, and the support, the people that have come forward to pledge their support for it. I do watch it with interest, not having a business myself, but it does show how the austerity cuts are not just affecting welfare or benefits, it's affecting businesses across the board as well.
It really is a reminder of about the impact of austerity and the fact that, I mean, we saw with a rather famous now letter that David Cameron wrote to Oxfordshire County Council expressing terror, you know, horror that they were cutting back this, that and something else. And the council, unsurprisingly, a Tory council, I might add, wrote back to him pointing out that it was his government that was cutting the funds that were providing these essential services. The fact is, the whole Tory ideology of small government, the whole ideology of making the poor, the disadvantaged and the young and small business people pay for the greed and fraud of the bankers has caused immense damage. And we really need real change in Britain. We cannot continue on as we are.
I said that was the last one. We've had one more tweet, which I'm going to put to you just before we cross to Jamie with the news. You have yet to convince Jenny Crystal. She's tweeted to say, if the Green Party get hold of the Isle of Wight, there will be cycle lanes, traveller camps, bus lanes, 20 mile per hour everywhere, noise nuisance, filthy streets and more.
Well, I'll pick out one of those, which is 20 mile per hour speed limits everywhere where people live, work and shop. There's a great deal of evidence that that cuts road deaths and serious injuries. It actually improves the amount of traffic you can fit on the road. Think about it. The spacing you need on a motorway, you need less spacing when you've got a lower speed limit. But also just think about our villages and towns being returned to people feeling safe and comfortable, particularly younger people, older people, vulnerable pedestrians and cyclists feeling safe. And think about the fact that we've got an obesity crisis affecting our NHS funding. We have problems with diabetes. A healthier, better society, more pleasant communities, a better quality of life. Yes, that is what the Green Party is offering.
We have more than run out of time. We would be delighted to host you again if you find yourself back on the Isle of Wight. Vic Slouthin from the Isle of Wight Green Party, Natalie Bennett, leader of the Isle of Wight Green Party, thank you so much. It's been the Friday Report.
This is the Friday Report. Mid-mornings on Isle of Wight Radio.
Sponsored by The Italian Touch, your exclusive Isle of Wight stockist of Joseph Ripkoff.